Welcome, everyone, to the Peaceful Planet Show. This is your host, Marcia McMahon, coming to you live today from the BBS radio, studio radio. And we're really happy to have a very special guest, Karen Tate. And there's more information posted about her wonderful book, Walking an Ancient Path. And we have a few announcements before we start our show. And that is that I want to remind our listeners of my website at www.DianaSpeaksToTheWorld. This is your show host, Marcia McMahon, and we are talking to Karen Tate today, who is the author of Walking an Ancient Path, and we're going to be featuring some very special messages as we do at the start of our show. Karen is an author of Sacred Places of the Goddess and Walking an Ancient Path, Rebirthing Goddess on Planet Earth. And she's very much connected to the goddess energy. And I love her work, and I think you'll love her work, too, as we discuss her connection to the various goddess sites around the world and this marvelous book that she's written. Before I proceed with our interview and a little more about our wonderful guest, and by the way, welcome, Karen. It's great to have you on air.
Glad to be here, Marcia.
And it's, we're very sorry to our audience and you for some of the technical glitches coming up this morning. But at any rate, I wanted to share a very special message from the collective goddesses, Mother Earth Gaia, the goddess Isis and Athena. And this is a very brief message that we're going to incorporate into our show with Karen Tate, who writes all about Isis temples and visits to Greece and everything like that in her wonderful book, Walking an Ancient Path. So usually I read a message at the start of the show from one of the members of the spiritual hierarchy, and certainly these ancient goddesses, whom we may think of as archetypes, but in fact are energies. And these energies have stepped forth with a special message to honor our guests this morning. So they are saying, we stand at the doorway of a new mankind, womankind. We are the collective of the goddesses of Gaia, including Isis and Athena, in whose temples you once served. Please go on then. In times past, we had temples to worship, and indeed those temples remind all of the vast power of the divine feminine. Athena, the goddess, has been worshipped for many thousands of years, and so has my image, Isis. I stand with you all who bring a reminder to humanity that the goddess is being born again from within the hearts of many women and men around the world, bringing order to the chaos of these most uncertain times. We are delighted to work with light workers like you and want to remind you that the heart of the goddess and God lies within each human heart, and that temples, while beautiful, are no longer needed. We will come and dwell within at your request. Blessed is she who walks with the goddess and sings her praises, for earth is ripe for her bounty. Gaia, Isis, and Athena. So, wow, what a powerful message, and what a powerful message you have in your book, Karen.
Oh, well, thank you, Marcia. That was an incredible message, and it really reflects what so many of us who are doing this work feel, you know, within ourselves. It's great validation, but we've all been talking about this long-awaited paradigm shift that I think has been so long in the making that, you know, we think that we're starting to feel these first fragile waves of this shift in consciousness around the world, and it's wonderful to hear that you know we've been we have been tuning in and you know picking up on that.
Well, your work is wonderful, and I want to direct our listeners to some of your websites and give them an idea about you. You can visit Karen's website by clicking more about this program, or you can go to www.karentate.com. She, again, is author of Sacred Places of the Goddess, 108 Destinations, and Walking an Ancient Path, which we're discussing this morning. And then she has a blog, and then she also has a very interesting YouTube video titled Sex, Power, and Politics of the Sacred Feminine, and it's at http://isis13. Is that correct?
Yeah, and actually it's even easier than that. If you just Google YouTube, there's a place where you can search, and if you just put in the name Karen Tate, or Karen Tate sex, power, and politics, it'll come up, as well as a few other things I have on YouTube, our sex temple, and I have our ISIS, you know, our ISIS temple of Thanksgiving, as well as a talk I gave at a Conscious Life Expo that I cut up into small segments, and you can listen to one at a time, you know, talking about this rising feminine consciousness.
Well, it definitely is a rise in consciousness, and I've heard from other of the Ascended Masters before Mother Mary, Princess Diana, and Mary Magdalene, who are all historical figures as well, and they have spoken also about the importance of the so-called divine feminine, and I really related to what you had to say in the YouTube video. You were talking about why goddess and why now, and if you could pick up on that again and elaborate a little bit on why goddess, why now for us,
well,
that would be fascinating.
Well, you know, for your listeners who might not know, you know, goddess isn't a new concept. The idea of a goddess has been around for at least 30,000 years. Some artifacts we have suggest even longer. In fact, you know, there was worship of a goddess long before there was God. And the reason for that was, you know, people in these ancient times saw that it was from woman life came forth. You know, women could also bleed without dying. You know, these were very potent acts that men couldn't manifest. So we saw the earth as female. You know, she provided all we needed to sustain ourselves. We saw woman as the powerful, magical gender. And, you know, it wasn't until much longer that we understood, you know, the part that, you know, males played in procreation. But that all got swept under the rug, you know, during the course of time. And goddess was minimized. And that's why the YouTube clip, you know, sex, power, and politics, that's what it was all about. It had not much
exactly
to do with religion or
spirituality. Well, you know, I mean, originally, and I'm an art historian, too, and I teach art history. So, you know, you go back to the earliest images that were created in art, the Venus of Willendorf and some of the ancient sculptures from Carol Hayek of the feline cat throne goddess and some of these other goddess imagery, and you're right. In earliest cultures on Earth, it was goddess that was first and primary, primordial,
right,
you might say. But then, you know, we moved into this last 2,000-year cycle of more of a patriarchal thing. And what I've been discovering with so many of my other guests, I've been doing the Holy Grail series, and we've been talking about the life of Jesus, and there's so much that's been taken out of the Bible on the actual role of his women disciples, and that's completely edited out, and we've been stuck with this patriarchal thing, which has pretty much created this mess that we're in, I feel.
Well, you know, it's really all about man-made dogma versus the energies of our divine deities. You know, man-made dogma has created these patriarchal religions that have diminished the female, the goddess, and a female role and female leadership in the world. And, you know, and the world suffers from disease, you know, from having denied a feminine face of God in so many cultures.
Because absolutely.
You know, you think just about the Judeo-Christian aspect, you know, they espouse several things that just don't jive with goddess spirituality, that God is the creator of the world, you know, that we are entitled to, you know, to justify that with, you know, war and, you know, conquest. You know, the teachings are that, you know, we have the right to dominate the nature and dominate women. And, you know, this is all man-made dogma, you know, that set men up above women, that allowed men to exploit natural resources, that justifies, you know, war and inquisition and fatwas. But, you know, that's not what goddess teaches, you know.
No, not at all. And I think that even in my research that I've done with other leading scholars on Christianity, for instance, that all of this was selectively removed from the official Christian records, but all evidence of Mary Magdalene having been Jesus' wife and so many of the other female contributors to the message, although it was distorted over time, and not just the Christian message, but all three of the major world religions are very patriarchal. And look at the Middle East, and you have a perfect example of what happens when you have this self-righteous, patriarchal type of dogmatic religion, where people end up killing in the name of God. How pathetic is that?
Well, but it's also here in the United States, too.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
You have, I'm going to have Father Roy Bourgeois on my radio show in a couple weeks. He's a priest here who's been talking about how it's discrimination and a sin to deny women ordination, you know.
Well, good for him.
They're
speaking out in the church. That's a good thing.
Right. I mean, there's a lot of things going on here, here in the United States too. You know, I think that speak to the fact that because the female faith of God has been denied so long, thereby women's rightful role in the world, their equality has been compromised. And you have domestic violence. You have female genital mutilation. I mean, you have cultural things going on. I mean, women, 70% of women retire in poverty. 3 of 5 women have been penetrated without their permission. Women making 78 cents on the dollar, where men, make 100 cents on the dollar. And if you're a black woman or a Hispanic woman, you make even less. You know, so it's this whole idea that, that women are not equal to men. They are not as valuable. And, that it goes back to the Garden of Eden, when woman was just Adam's helpmate and not his equal, because, there was one version of Genesis that had man and woman created simultaneously. That didn't serve the early patriarchs to set men above women, and right now you have a movement among evangelicals here in the United States, something called New Feminism. Well, if you hear that term, don't be fooled, because it's meant to fool you. It's not about feminism, which is about trying to create an equal and caring society. This new feminism, if you look at it closely, on the surface it looks like it's honoring the feminine, but it talks about women's dependence and women's submission. Now, if you're dependent and you have to submit, especially on the marital bed, That's not equality. In fact, that's just, that's downright repression or oppression. So, we really have to look at these things that are being taught everywhere around the world. And, women really need to step up. I say when I give my talks, we can't just be the hands that rock the cradles. We have to be the hands that broker the deals that change the world.
And very much so. I think people like that are now in positions of power. When you say that, I think of Hillary Clinton or former Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, and certainly women are definitely brokering more deals, and they're definitely being more visible. Michelle Obama is all the rage right now. But the thing is, they got to look beyond the fashion. They've got to look at the character of the woman. They've got to look at what they're allowing women to become involved with. So,
you're right.
Society is definitely going through a marvelous transformation.
Yeah, I think it's very hopeful. I mean, there's lots of horrible things still wrong.
Yeah,
we're moving in that direction. I mean, just for instance, recently, two things that came out of the Vatican that I think are sure signs that we're making progress. The first was not very long ago when I was writing my first book, and I mentioned this in my book. The Pope actually convened, a meeting of all the bishops and higher-ups because he was so concerned about losing people in the church to alternative religions. And alternatively, just recently, this was just within the last year, he actually came out and talked against feminist theology. And what he was saying was all of his priests at the local level who were hearing the demands and the requests and the cries of the people in their congregations to include the mother alongside the father, and who bent to that, who understood that they wanted this balance and this equality for the male and the female, goddess and god. He said that, no ritual that was performed using this unauthorized liturgy would be recognized by the Vatican. But it goes to show you how many people out there are starved for the mother and the father. I mean, no matter how hard the church tried to get rid of the mother, they couldn't. I mean, look at all the cathedrals across the world dedicated
to Mother
Mary.
Well, Mother Mary became the archetype of the goddess energy, and certainly,
yeah, the baton got passed.
Certainly,
from,
she still is, and
yeah,
there are
absolutely
some members in the church that virtually worship her too, which I'm perfectly okay with. The thing is, though, that what they need to do is, instead of emphasizing the virginity and all the other things with the dogma, is look at the character of the human being that was Mother Mary, and as well, not only lift her up, but lift up the women in the church to allow them responsible and equal roles, which they have yet to do. But see, they edited out all the records and all the evidence of what the female disciples were all about. So, that's a patriarchal thing to have done. But getting back to your point, Karen, you found it hopeful simply because they kind of declared through an edict of some sort that they wouldn't allow this type of worship. Is that
well,
what you're saying?
It's we're making progress. It's on their radar screen. Maybe it's a thorn in their side. They're having to deal with it. So that says to me, we're making incredible progress. I mean, I know a fella who I interviewed him on my radio show, and he told me 40 years ago he had his house firebombed for mentioning the idea of the goddess in public. And now today, this very same gentleman is the head of all chaplains in the prison system. He even teaches rabbi chaplains and Christian chaplains, and he's a pagan. So he also addresses, he's addressed Congress and he's addressed administrations. So, I mean, the idea of the sacred feminine is in all of these nooks and crannies, and, it's not just coming from Wiccans, it's not just coming from pagans. This concept, the energy, the ideal of it, the archetype of it, the whole, it's sort of like I look at it as sort of like the three prongs, deity, archetype, and ideal. It's infiltrating our psyches. And I mean, I look at Barack Obama, quite frankly, and I'm sure he does not associate what he's doing as ideals of the sacred feminine. I have no idea if he's even aware of what the sacred feminine is. But his manner, his message, the way he deals with people, negotiates with people, these are methods of the sacred feminine. It's partnership. It's negotiation.
His consciousness is very elevated compared to the last one we had in there.
Oh, you're not kidding.
And besides which, I think he does... coming from an African American heritage, he embraces qualities and character traits of humanitarianism and equality. And so I'm sure that what he's doing, and I've seen it in his speeches too, he embraces all of the same principles. He may not have heard of goddess spirituality or the New Age movement or the Wiccan movement or any of these other movements that are afoot, but he, in a way, is very much right there, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he talks about the needs of the many, not the few.
That's
Most of our presidents have been white men who were born with a silver spoon in their mouth.
Exactly.
They didn't even know how much a gallon of milk cost. So
mm-hmm.
How could they possibly care about the average person and, what their needs are? I mean, it's unconscionable that here in the United States, everyone doesn't have health care, that kids go to bed hungry at night, that education is slipping every year, That's what we get for having, putting plutocrats in charge of our country. But now
exactly.
It's shifted, Now
it has
feels shifted, like it
shifted, and we are in the process of the great shift. I mean, in New Age parlance, we are on the verge of ascension, we're on the verge of a golden age, and basically we are entering that, and like it or not, these other institutions, as you can see from the stock market and the banks and all the white male-dominated cultural icons are falling one by each. So,
yeah.
You know, you have, and it's not altogether a pleasant scene for a lot of people. It's affecting all of us as light workers, but at the same time, what it's going to do ultimately is it will equal the playing field a little bit more each and every day. I think we're getting closer to the expression of the divine feminine.
You're so right, Marcia. And imagine, I mean, I can't remember. I mean, I thought it would have been too much to expect to actually hear on television that the news media and, you know, people in power were talking about greed being a bad thing. It's almost
mm-hmm.
like, you know, greed was the 11th commandment, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was,
well,
you
in
know,
America, yeah. I mean, it's
yeah.
the name of the game.
Yeah, and that's really just, it's absurd. And I think we're seeing the, you know, the flaw in that logic, you know, and I always talk to people about, you know what, let's value ourselves differently. Let's not value ourselves by how many dollars are in our checkbook. I mean, of course, we want to have enough to get by. You know, we don't want to live a life of scarcity. But at the same time, so many people have more than they're ever going to need, more than they're ever going to spend. And, you know, this greed mentality, I'm so glad it's starting to become, you know, politically incorrect, you know, and maybe we start talking about being in service to one another, looking out for one another so that there is more of a level playing field. And it's like that idea of, you know, let all of our boats be lifted up, you know, not just the select few, you know, who live in their ivory towers.
Yes, and I completely concur with you on that 100%. And I think you spoke well concerning the reformation that we're needing to see in society as a whole and the impact that the divine feminine can have on each and every one of our lives and collectively. And I think we're speaking here collectively about the collective consciousness and how it is shifting to this awareness. And whenever I go to, you know, light worker fairs and I go to speak on my book or present my art, there's usually a certain segment of people that are involved in pagan Wicca types of things. And so, you know, I've gotten to know some of the people in that movement, and I think it blends well. Now, some, you know, aren't into what I'm doing with the channeling, and others are very open. So I think we have all these non-mainstream movements coming forth. And I think that there's going to be more and more of this as time goes by.
Well, you know, I talk about finding, you know, finding common ground and building bridges. And one of the things we've done here in Los Angeles is, you know, every July we would usually honor ISIS. Because July is the month of ISIS's birthday, and for years now we've been doing a public ISIS, you know, tea and salon at a public tea house. Well, you know, we started to join forces with the Mary Magdalene women here because Mary Magdalene's birthday is also in July. So now men and women get together in a tea house or a Moroccan restaurant, and we honor both Mary Magdalene and ISIS in July. And you know, we don't agree on everything, but you know what? We can so easily find ourselves standing on that sacred feminine umbrella with lots of common ideas, you know.
That sounds really fun. If I lived near you, I'd be there. I will tell you that something, a little tidbit of fascinating information. About a month ago, I had some well-known authors who have written on Mary Magdalene through past life regression. And their latest book is titled The Power of the Magdalene. And Joanna Prentice and Stuart Wilson revealed that actually Mary Magdalene came out of the Egyptian ISIS connection. In other words, she was involved in a secret cult in Egypt, as most of the Essenes were, and they used all kinds of different magic in Egypt, and that this was part of her contribution. And this has all been, of course, edited out of Christianity because, you know, Christians would think that this is totally pagan, but there's nothing at all pagan about it. if you understand the true mission of Jesus, he was actually a world teacher. He embraced all faiths and all traditions.
Well, and he was part of the money changers in the temple either, you know. He walked with the poor, he walked with the women. He embodied the sacred feminine ideals.
He definitely did.
Himself.
And I thought you'd enjoy hearing that Isis and Magdalene were part of one cult, and that Magdalene received some secret initiations in the temple of Isis in Egypt.
Well, you know, it doesn't surprise me at all. In fact, the first clue I had about that was when I read the book Templar Revelations, and they talked about Mary Magdalene and Jesus being part of that Isaiah Osiris mysteries.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, when, you know, Mary Magdalene is you know, anointing Jesus, with spikenard, I think, was the herb, the ointment?
Yeah, I think for the crucifixion before his death, yeah.
Well, not then, not at the crucifixion, but I believe it was at the Last Supper.
That's what I meant, before the crucifixion.
Oh, okay, yeah, sorry.
You're right.
That's actually part of a priestess rite. You know, so, I mean, it really, that was one of the clues, you know, that she was really a priestess, and she was, she was just doing this part of these mysteries, from that pagan, Isis Osiris mysteries stuff.
That makes sense, too. That's very interesting. We're going to take a brief break and listen to a song here, Remarkable Diana, in honor of Princess Diana, and these songs are being written by Bob Murray. And we're going to take a little break, and we're going to come right back with Karen Tate. Don? And you were listening to Remarkable Diana. This music is being channeled in by Bob Murray at thestarstillshine.com, and it is, of course, in honor of Princess Diana. It was written by John Lennon on the other side. So we thank you for joining us this afternoon, and we're still speaking with the author, Karen Tate, and we're talking about walking an ancient path. So, Karen, I'd like to comment on your book, if I may, and make some comments about your pictures and your research on all these ancient goddess sites, because being an art history professor, I really loved the sense of going to these places and visiting ancient temples, you know, like in ancient Greece and so on. I mean, I can really relate to that. And I haven't been over to Delphi, but it's on my list of to-dos.
Well, I definitely recommend it. And, you know, I'd say for anyone listening, if you want to visit goddess sites, and I think that's a wonderful way to validate for yourself that this is all real, you know, and it's not just some feminist fantasy or something, you know, just go there and actually stand in the energy. But don't make the mistake of taking a traditional tour. You really have to go with a group that's focused on the goddess sites, because trust me, if you don't, you're going to miss most of the goddess sites, and you're certainly not going to hear the goddess history that's been swept under the rug. So go with a group that's going to focus on goddess, because otherwise what will happen is, if you're in Egypt, you're only going to hear about Ramses. If you're at Delphi, you're only going to hear about Apollo. You won't go down the road to the Temple of Athena or where the oracles bathe. And in Malta, when we were in Malta, we were listening to these tour guides tell people that these beloved fat ladies, you know, the lower torsos of the goddesses, were sumo wrestlers.
Oh, my goodness. That's ludicrous, isn't it?
Yeah.
Now, yeah. I've seen those Malta goddess figures. They're beautiful. And the temple at Malta is equally beautiful. I teach that in art history. And, of course, I've taught, you know, Delphi many times. And I was even regressed to a past life where I remember being part of a group of women that worshiped Athena. And we were under her protection in the past life. There was an invasion that occurred, and I remember hiding in a cave and calling upon her. This is all on tape, and it's fascinating information. And it was very interesting. This was done by a professional PhD psychologist, and I was just exploring my past life, and then came back and listened to the CD again, and went to a Google search on Delphi and the Temple of Athena, and it turns out that it was invaded in 330 BC. So I don't know if that was the same invasion or not, but it very well could have been.
Well, and I just realized I misspoke too. I think I said the Temple of Athena there, and it's actually the Temple of Artemis. Yeah, she's got a beautiful a round temple there that's just down the road, maybe about 500 yards. And
yeah, I thought that was the Temple of Athena, the round temple. That's the one I'm looking at.
Yeah, and, you know, so definitely if and when you go, don't miss that. You know, go sit there for a while.
Oh, well, I would definitely connect with that, because I have the past life memory of being there, Of course, it's in ruins today, but I think that I was involved, perhaps, in this past life. And again, you know, it's not exactly exact information. It's from memory. But there was something to do with the psychic work there and the Apithia, who sat across the crevice in the rock and did all these predictions for all the ancients of the world. I mean, they were very world-renowned and very accurate.
Well, you know, you hear all the time about, you know, women having the power to prophecy, you know, especially, you know, when they're having their menstrual period, you know. I mean, it's common that, you know, the women of the tribes, you know, used to go sit in the red tent and, you know, and prophesize, you know, for their tribe, for their, you know, for their community. And, you know, I think they were, you know, we, back then, I think we had the ability to tap in, you know, maybe on a higher level than we do now. I mean, I think maybe that's part of some of the ancient knowledge that's been lost, you know, having swept, you know, goddess and everything that, you know, all the abilities of her priestesses, you know, beneath the rug.
Well, I think in my case, I've got a lineage that goes way back, and I think I've always had the gift from lifetime to lifetime. but it expresses in different ways in different lifetimes. And certainly, I wasn't aware that I had the psychic gift until, you know, later in life when it began to blossom. So, you know, it's likely that a lot more people will be waking up to this as we reconnect with this kind of divine energy, the goddess energy. And it's not surprising to hear people talk about these connections that they find at the ancient sites. I've heard people talk about Stonehenge, too, that there's some powerful energy at Stonehenge as well.
Well, you know, all of these sites, you know, I believe that they are repositories of, you know, people's passions, you know, their religious fervor, their needs, their intention. I mean, they're just, you know, chock full of, you know, of intense emotions. And I think when you go to these places, you know, it's almost impossible on some level not to tap into that. I mean, you know, everybody doesn't have that gift, you know. I mean, for some
True.
It's just a subtle shift in energy. You know, some may just experience it as a, you know, a magical, beautiful place, you know, where other people like you, you know, probably, you know, have the ability to actually, you know, get messages. But, you know, I wouldn't want people to think when they go to these sites that if they don't get messages that, you know, something's wrong with them or they're
not.
I think
people realize that certain people have these psychic gifts, and everybody has it to a degree, I do believe. But it's just like our talent. You know, some of it can be encouraged and taught, and some of it is a natural talent. So
yeah, because, you know,
even... one of those things.
Well, and even when you go to the sites, if nothing more happens, then you awaken to what was before, you know? I mean, that's powerful in itself. I mean, I had teachers with me, mythology teachers, on the last tour I led to Turkey, the end of last year, and they told me after the trip, they said, Karen, you know, we are going to be able to talk to our students from a totally different place now. I mean, now that we've stood, you know, on this hallowed ground of the goddess, I mean, we're going to be able to convey, you know, these places and what it was like and everything else on a so much more powerful level. And, you know, just for themselves, you know, I think validated, it reinforced, you know, their belief, their spirituality. You know, it's like layers of an onion. I mean, it affects you on so many different levels, you know.
The art alone in these ancient sites is powerful, but I can't imagine how powerful it might be to be doing some ancient ritual or gathering, you know, in the name of. But I did hear that in Greece they don't allow mention of Athena officially or any of the so-called pagan religions to be celebrated openly at the sites. Is that true?
Well, you know, I'm not sure, but, you know, I can tell you this, that I, you know, one of the reasons I talked about go with a tour that's geared toward this is because you have to remember, you know, these other patriarchal religions have such a stranglehold on people's psyche. And the local tour guides are not goddess-oriented, you know, so they may even think it's blasphemy for them to be talking about these, you know, these goddesses. You know what I'm saying?
Let me ask you, Karen, are you still doing tours? Because I'd like to come on the tour if you are.
Well, you know, we're taking a break this year because the economy is so rough for everybody. But we are seriously looking at doing another tour to Turkey in 2010 because Turkey isn't on the euro yet, so it's still very affordable. And I mean, there's so much culture there from so many
There's so much wonderful Greek culture.
But
getting back to what you were saying about teachers, having taught art history and art as long as I have, I always tell my students that there is validity in all religious traditions, including the ancient mystery cults, ancient Greece, ancient Egypt, and that the more you know about them, the more amazing they are. So don't close your mind and say, well, I'm a monotheist and I don't accept this. I said, the pagan religions have their validity.
When you open your mind, you know, to the idea that there's something maybe beyond what you were born into, you start to see the common threads.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, the Jews borrowed from the Babylonians, the Christians borrowed from the Jews and the pagans. I mean, you know, there's more about Mary in the Quran than there is in the Bible, you know?
Sure. The other thing is that the Jewish people also, their whole tradition of monotheism seems to have sprung up from the tradition of Akhenaten. So there is a tradition, and there's a lot of things that came out of Egypt when they came out of Egypt.
Well, and archaeologists are finding now that the early Israelites were polytheists. You know, not only are they recognizing that, you know, they worshipped God, but they also worshipped Asherah, God's wife, and other deities.
I hadn't heard that one before. That's
yeah,
a good one.
Yeah, there's it's been, you know, in the archaeology magazines, it's been on documentaries. So, I mean, it's really hard for people to rethink their faith sometimes, you know.
It is. But the thing is, I think more than ever people are leaving the mainstream religions kind of behind because they're looking for something with more ritual, more richness. I think that's why a lot of people are into the pagan religion and the New Age movement. And all of these movements are really pretty much have a lot of commonality in that they are rejecting the patriarchal religions in favor of a more personal embrace of our understanding, because actually, I think humankind has a totally fallacious understanding of God and the spiritual hierarchy. There are these people that walked the earth, that lived here, that contributed so much to humanity that they ascended. They don't need to reincarnate. So basically, we have a whole hierarchy of guides and angels that are also present, that most of the religions would like to edit out, but they're present in all the ancient pagan religions. So
I think also, too, the patriarchal religions tried to detach us from our body. You know, they don't want us to experience the body on any level. It's all about being in the head. You know, so if you have revelations, if you can channel, you know, I mean, these sorts of things or taboo, you know. I mean, look at how they took the sexuality away from Mary. I mean, you have to put Mary and Mary Magdalene together to make a whole woman, you know. So, I mean, there's a lot to, I think, be said for why people are leaving these patriarchal faiths, including, I'm a former Catholic from the Bible Belt in New Orleans.
Well, I'm a former Catholic, too, so there you go.
and you know, you look at, you know, you had all of this pedophilia in the church.
Yep.
You just had the Pope go into AIDS-ravaged Africa, and he still wants to talk about abstinence instead of telling men to use condoms. I mean,
it's going to do is condemn those people to endless amounts of suffering with AIDS. You know, that's all it's going to do.
Well, you know, I think these are all reasons why people, you know, they have stopped. I mean, I call it, you know, swallowing the whole enchilada, you know, that they're questioning now. You know, they're questioning, like Stephen Colbert says, the truthiness. You know, they're questioning the truthiness of this dogma that's out there. And they're giving themselves permission to, you know, read ancient history, to, you know, look at the power of icons and archetypes. And, you know, they're tapping into, I think, their divine wisdom.
Exactly. And, you know, a lot of this opened up, I think, with psychology and Jung and archetypes, and then it sort of took off into various movements from there if you wanted to trace it. But I don't think you can really trace it back to any one person because the goddess has been here since the beginning of time.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the beauty of it. So anyway, Karen, it was really a delight having you on the show, and I would like to invite you to come back again because we didn't even cover a lot of the places in your book, the art that you've created, these different altars and other things. So, but it was really very nice to speak with you today, and we want to refer our listeners to your website again at www.karentate.com. And if you have anything else you'd like to add in our concluding remarks, please feel free to do so now.
Well, thank you, Marcia. It's been wonderful, and I'd love to come back on again. Because you said there is so much to say. I mean, there's so much to teach, so much that's been swept under the rug. You know, and it's really important for men and women to open up to this, because the sacred feminine is also for men. You know, men have been so wounded themselves by not, you know, experiencing the unconditional love of the Divine Mother, you know, and that could be a whole nother show. But I would just welcome listeners to please take a look at my books. They've been endorsed by the Joseph Camp Foundation. And if you're not busy on a Wednesday night, tune into my radio show, Voices of the Sacred Feminine, which Marcia is going to be on later on in the month, and we're going to talk about Lady Diana for the first time on the show.
Well, that'll be a delight to be with you again, Karen. And I want to thank our listeners for listening today and tuning in, and want to invite you back again next week, and mention also to visit my website at Diana Speaks to the World. And also one other thing, want to mention my latest watercolor of Mother Mary, which is posted up on the site, and you can buy a signed autographed copy of that if you're interested and you resonate with Mother Mary. It's up on the BBS website, Peaceful Planet, Saturday at 10. And thank you again for joining us, our listeners and Karen. We're going to close out with some special music titled Holy Grail Divine by Richard Schulman. Thank you all again, and many blessings to all.